The SGGQA podcast is brought to you in part by One More. Treat your ears. One More's mission is to bring innovation, design, and quality to all music lovers, young or old, frugal or spendy. Offering an incredible collection of earbuds at all tiers of the market, cabled or Bluetooth, neckband or true wireless. Fantastic sound quality, top-tier tuning, excellent noise reduction. I've personally been a fan for a couple years now. Right now, my headphone of choice is the Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. Great battery life, punchy dynamic sound, and crazy good noise reduction in a very convenient just drop your earbud neckband design. Or you can get those same features and completely cut the cords with the Dual Driver ANC True Wireless, one of the absolute best options in the completely cable-free space. Or maybe you want to fill a decently large room with a pair of One More portable Bluetooth speakers. There's a whole collection of great audio options for you to shop at affordable prices. And for listeners of this podcast, I can also do you one better. If you shop at onemore.com, use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout. Once again, SOMEGADGETGUY10 with no spaces. You'll save an additional 10% over their already competitive prices. You'd spend over $80 less on One More's Dual Driver ANC True Wireless compared to that other brand's Pro earbuds. You know who I'm talking about. One More brings style, premium audio quality, and cool tech features to the table at prices that won't hurt the wallet. You can check out these multiple award-winning audio solutions at onemore.com. And remember to use promo code SOMEGADGETGUY10 at checkout to save some scratch. All right. I believe this means we are live. Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, tech fans of all shapes and sorts and sizes and persuasions, welcome to another Monday morning tech chat show on the SGGQA podcast channel. I'm Juan Carlos Bagnell, aka Some Gadget Guy, the SGG of this terribly named podcast series. And of course, the QA stands for question and answer, which we're going to lean really hard into for this week. I felt like just having kind of a chill show. We've been hitting the politics really hard. We've been hitting the new releases really hard. We've been hitting the rumors and leaks really hard. And I was kicking back on Saturday watching TK stream and just thinking, like, you know, it'd be kind of nice just to dig in and have kind of a nerdy tech chat, really focus on the chat that's going on right now, make sure that we're having a really fun conversation. And then also I've got some, you know, results to share. I put out a video on the Pixel 5, which we're going to be talking about. And then, you know, we can kind of compare, contrast, and pick apart some reviewer photography tropes. So I'm feeling pretty good. I felt like I needed to have more of a pajama podcast. So I'm still in my sweatpants. I'm already seeing a really fun group. We've got Hickey85, we've got Pacostin, we've got All Greg, Awesome Possum, Blue Malicious, subscribed, you know, subscribed with Prime, subscribed for 3 months now. Definitely appreciate the support, the subscriptions. That really comes in handy, and I dig on that. JMX Warrior, All Greg, Q3 Becker, Simon Says Hypno. I think we got a good crew in here. I think we're going to have a right fun old time. All Greg, yes, Pixel 5 and made by Google. We got to talk about, I got the podcast all prepped. I don't even have my prop. I need my phone prop. I also need to get a mug of water from one of these tasty beverage receptacles that I maybe sell as merch. I mean, if you can't hear it, my voice still isn't much better from previous weeks. It's nice having some weather. I'm not complaining about that. But whenever we get the rain and the wind and all of the stuff starts blooming, I definitely have that bit of rhinitis and some allergic reactions to what's going on. So I start to sound real rough. There will probably be additional throat clearing during this broadcast. 1 second. Yes, my trusty Pixel 5. Okay, good. I've got my prop. We can actually do this. We can do the show now. Very excited. Very excited. Oh, Hakey's in the room. Rosted. Excellent. Blue Militia, in Goog We Trust, saying good morning, all. I wonder if in Goog We Trust is on the Pixel joint. If they enjoy that. I gotta say, you know, in putting out a video on the Pixel, one of the most disheartening conversations to have is in the Google Pixel subreddit. It's just like, it's basically where people go to complain about Pixels. It's not where people go to like talk about using Pixels. All right. So, starting off the show as we usually do, I hope you all had a nice weekend. I want to jump right into some housekeeping because part of the housekeeping was a really lovely time that we had on the Patreon on Saturday. I've been trying to find other ways that we can put together maybe some more group activities or community activities. We did a pretty successful game night run, and I want to get back to that, do another game night. But Saturday, we started our very first movie night. Sorry, I'm getting texts from my wife because there's a lot of family stuff happening. So that was very distracting. Yes, our very first movie night, and I very much enjoyed it. We all jumped on a Discord chat room. We all pushed play at the same time and watched Night of the Living Dead, one of my all-time favorite films. And it was it was really fun. I mean, again, 1960s classic horror, George Romero accidentally creating this massive civil rights statement in who they cast. And it's just a great movie. It's cornball, and it completely redefines the zombie monster prior to zombies. Prior to 1968, zombies were very problematic commentaries on like very racist depictions of voodoo and black dark evil magic. So, you know, this is a hard course correct for what we consider the zombie. The zombie hasn't really been around as we know it in its modern incarnation for very long. It kicked off in 1968, thanks in large part to Night of the Living Dead. So it's one of my favorite films to jump into, and it creates so many of the zombie film tropes that we exist, that exist today in cinema. You know, where the zombies come from, what happens when you die, if you get bit, blah, 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 blah. The cannibalism aspect. I mean, all of those things are all created by this film. And the film never even calls them zombies. Originally, the concept was to make them like an Egyptian curse built on mummies. And then after that, they were just going to be wacky undead cannibals. Like the original title card for the film was Night of the Flesh Eaters. And because they changed the title card, didn't properly fill out the title card for the film, you know, you can get a copy of Night of the Living Dead totally for free because it fell into the public domain. Again, George Romero's most impressive and influential work. It's a testament to low budget filmmaking. It's 1960s eerie and claustrophobic, and it's got cinematography in line with like classic Twilight Zone. And George Romero made very, very little money off of a film that was ridiculously successful for its time. It's a tragic story, but it's also kind of amazing how that film has kind of changed the media landscape. From Loki Ted, Night of the Living Dead was great. I wonder how it would have been in color. Not as good. Not as good. I do not like colorizing black and white films. The lighting, the cinematography, it's all built around the hard contrast of what they were trying to achieve. I mean, the vision was black and white film, so you shoot for black and white film. And there's sequences in the house where like someone's walking up the stairs and there are these hard shadows that look almost like prison bars on someone's face. And it's to try and reinforce that feeling of confinement. I don't think moments like that hold up as well when you boost saturation and you juice up color and you have to change the lighting dynamics to make that work. I always feel like colorizing black and white cinema takes away from the look, the hard edged, the contrast, the grayscale of what it is that those filmmakers achieved. I'm kind of a purist. I don't even like the re-released Star Trek. You know, when you watch Star Trek on Netflix, it's got all these much, much nicer computer animation effects for the Enterprise. They try to make it still look hokey like old models, but I think it's discordant. I think it's distracting when you see like 1960s set design with like hard flip switches and little flashing lights that don't mean anything. And then you cut to an exterior shot of the Enterprise and it's CG. I don't think it looks as good. I think it looks wrong to divide completely different television and filmmaking technologies. So, yeah, we had it was a really fun time. We had a great group in a text chat room, sort of all making fun of the classic zombie tropes of running into a house or running downstairs or trying to escape the news broadcasts, you know, stay in your home, stay safe with your family. All of that comes from Night of the Living Dead. It's great. Loki Ted also saying that people say the black and white version of Logan is good for the lighting. I can't find a copy to see that, though. The black and white version of Logan is very good. That one, I kind of feel like it can exist as two different experiences because of how it was originally released in theaters, but that's different. You know, like creating a different mood by desaturating a film that was shot in color is very different than trying to add color to a film that was originally shot on black and white film stock. Dave Burns, it would have been worse as a production too. Color film is expensive and harder to edit. Completely agree. McCorkran 3. Should I listen to this on my Liberty Air 2 Pros or my One More Dual Drivers? Just walking in with some hard flexing on really nice consumer earbuds there, buddy. I'll probably go with the Dual Drivers since Juan likes One More. I feel my dulcet tones are going to be best represented by something that has a bit of a lift in the mids, just to kind of catch a little bit of my vocal texture. So, McCorkran, I'm real pumped about the One More Dual Drivers. I got them on eBay for $63. Not bad. Juan More. Love it. My One More Dual Driver ANC Pro neckband. I think that's probably the most used Bluetooth device that I've got. But I'm talking with the cats at Mi Audio because I use their in-ear, I use their MX3 because it has a bit of a lift in the mids. That's their triple driver. I really like those for getting my work done. So I'm talking to them about kind of refreshing my promo code. I know they've got some new gear out, like a balanced 2.5 millimeter connector, sort of premium audiophile earbud, some interesting stuff, and not ridiculously audiophile priced. So some interesting things. And I've got some more audio gear. I've got something from another audiophile brand, and I honestly don't know if it's technically under embargo. So I probably shouldn't mention it, but I'm going to try and start also looking at a few more options for things like USB DACs. It's just been so disheartening to talk about USB audio adapters because the some of the more high-profile versions of this solution are kind of terrible, like the Microsoft Surface USB-C adapter, terrible. I mean, just really not good. So I need to reach out to this audio manufacturer and see, like, you're not selling it yet. Are we talking about it? Are we not? It's like, again, it was kind of a nice surprise. It showed up in the mail, but now I don't know what I'm supposed to do with it. Mm-hmm. Oh, and McCorkran, JLab, the JLab ANC, also very feature-rich. The JLabs are great, and I just recently did the Earfun, which some people have been telling me are similar to the Phil. Yeah, awesome. It was great. Plenty of good audio gear conversations to be had. And I don't know, it kind of feels like the right time to sort of dig back into a little bit more of this coverage. I don't know. Just as a general, we're going to get into a lot of conversation about sort of phone reviewing. And I don't know. I mean, I think it's probably pretty clear how cranky I've been feeling about the state of sort of smartphone and tech reviewing, and kind of being the wet blanket that has to call out other reviewers. Everyone hates me on Reddit, which is hilarious. Like, he just thinks everyone should think like him, when the main argument I'm making is like, we should have more competition. Oh, I hate this guy. He's always not talking about my favorite phone. That's getting old. It's getting really tired. And I kind of feel like I want to have more conversations about like what we do with technology rather than just the technology itself. So one of the things that we do with technology is consume media, and like, I love audio, and as much as really elitist tech influencers would want us to believe, I don't feel like classic cabled headphones are completely displaced by Bluetooth. So yeah, it's kind of time for me to look at some other options. I'm real curious about that balanced connector Mi Audio earbud. Like, I really want to pair that up with something like my Fio BTR5. And I really think like that could be a very good combination. So I'm kind of anxious. Like, I want to see like what that might sound like. Aw, Gary the Fireman, I still use the OnePlus neckband from some audio guy, some gadget guy, on almost a daily basis. Aw, Simon says Hypno. Thanks, man. Cranky Juan rocks. And Dave Burns, how dare you hold tech darlings to high standards? We're gonna be talking about that once we actually get into what we're doing. I should probably also knock out some housekeeping. Yeah, I showed this off. We did the movie night. I'm hoping to maybe do a game night in about 2 weeks. And then every 2 weeks we'll alternate game night, movie night, game night, movie night. And especially for my next movie night, I want to try and find a way to do it sort of more middle of the day. I mean, it's not as I love the nighttime, no distractions movie viewing experience. But if we find like some cornball science fiction, then that's something that my daughter could watch. And we could do that in the middle of the day and get people who are in different time zones. We can do something like that and have like a real good, community viewing where we all push play at the same time. And I'm looking at a couple programs where maybe we can sync it up a little bit better, because when we all just push play, then it's kind of, I was about 30 seconds behind the main chat, and I kept having to try and like catch up second by second, because my copy of Night of the Living Dead had that Criterion splash screen. But if you watch Night of the Living Dead from archive.org, it takes you immediately into the movie. There's no preamble, there's no pre-credit. It's just movie go. And so I mean, like, I was watching the chat sort of, oh, haha, Barbara just got punched in the face. And you're like, oh, but I'm like 30 seconds away from her getting punched in the face. So I want to find something that we can kind of sync it all up a little bit better. From Heike, have you tried Hi-Diz adapters? They're surprisingly good. I have not, but I've heard very good things. In that kind of first surge of the Google Pixel adapter, the Razer adapter, the iPhone adapter, we had the different USB-C cable standards. You know, HTC got rid of the headphone jack and then just had a miserable pass-through adapter. Like, it was proper bad. I got real burnt out on that. I mean, that was shortly after leaving Pocket Now. And you just test so many of these stupid little dongle things, and it burned me out. I didn't enjoy it. So I'm trying to come back to that. And I feel now that we've kind of moved every consumer over to Bluetooth, if we at least highlight a couple examples for folks who appreciate a cable, then I think we've got a good spectrum, right? consumers believe in the BS story of Bluetooth being more convenient and now starting to sound really good. Great. We can keep that as a great product segment. If you want to replace your headphones more frequently, I don't think that's more convenient, but at least you don't have a cable attaching you to your phone. Cool. Then I really want to highlight adapters, something like the Fio BTR5, which can work cabled. It can work wireless. It's a great little portable DAC amp, and it drives another cabled headphone. And I think that's really cool. So now we've got kind of something that blurs the lines, and then we can work back and do a better job of highlighting a few of these better, more premium options like Hi-Diz. I'm struggling on other brand names now. I'm trying not to mention the company that sent me one because I don't know if I'm supposed to talk about it. But it's a spectrum. I get real mad when we act like there's one agreed upon winner, because that's not true. We want options and we want good competition to represent some of these different tiers. Yeah, from McCorkran, it's tragic you can't just throw in a $20 KZ IEM into your iPhone or Samsung in 2021. Moment of silence. Moment of silence for something that was a really good solution for a lot of people out there. So we got a couple videos out last week. I was really excited. We got some good content produced. And one of the major talking points, again, something that kind of throws a thumb in the eye of the average consumer conversation, getting to spend some time with the Xperia Pro, a phone for pros. This is a truly professional grade solution. And pretty much anyone who's complaining about the price is objectively wrong. It's funny watching tech influencers sort of pat themselves on the back saying things like, well, I mean, this phone does something that literally no other phone on the market does, but really Sony's just pricing it this high because they can. And you have zero evidence that the R&D on this isn't a challenge. You've shown no other competing solution that can be that approaches this price as any kind of competitive factor. And this is just your way of trying to besmirch Sony. Like, you're trying to find something to complain about. Oh no, this phone is too expensive. Compared to what? Compared to what? So, again, it's an obviously rigged game where as long as you only say nice things to Samsung and Apple owners, then you're going to be much, much more successful. Case in point, you can check out my YouTube channel. There's a pretty good reason I'm not as successful. Ah, Gary the Fireman, another tier one sub. Dude, again, thank you so much for supporting. I mean, you have been knocking it out, and I really do appreciate all of the support on this, especially for how cranky and nerdy these conversations get. From Gabaletta, they reviewed it as a smartphone that can do other cool things versus what the phone actually is. And I feel like that it's that kind of presentation. It's like we only can suffer a conversation on a Sony or a Motorola or an LG if there's something wacky, right? You know, we can't think of anything that you might want to do on a dual screen phone. So the Velvet, I mean, it's cool, I guess, but who would really buy this phone? And dual screen, man, it's just so inelegant compared to a $2,000 folding phone. I can't think of any benefit someone might have having two screens. And the phone itself is really nice competition for a Galaxy A71, but it's just not worth it for the monies, even though it's exactly the same price as a Galaxy A71 and does some things better than a Galaxy A71. It's totally rigged. But then you get like a wacky search popular phone for a couple months like the LG Wing. And now, oh, phones are so weird. Isn't it fun? Oh, I miss when phones were super duper weird. This is nifty. And then they just go back to panning on LG after the buzz of something unusual has come out. So we got a whole surge of like, I'm so glad that Sony exists and that they're making a pro phone, but it's not really worth it as a phone. So you shouldn't really buy it. And like, I guess it's interesting what Sony's doing. Instead of like really trying to highlight, like, you know, if you work in broadcast or if you work in education or if you work in some media environment, like that's the right fit. I'm gonna try and position this conversation for folks that have no, you know, like no interest, not even like a desire to work in broadcast, but just an interest. I mean, the number of people in my chat right now, I'm sure you don't work in broadcast, but it's at least interesting to kind of see what these solutions look like. So, short story, incredibly long, as does my housekeeping usually run. I had a lot of fun with this. This was a very interesting product to get my hands on, and it fits right in line with some of the other one-off videos that I've worked on. Like if we look at a Panasonic, like a Toughbook, there's something really fun about taking that out for a spin. I mean, the last one I took out was like a ridiculously expensive Android tablet, but it's a Toughbook tablet and it's built to that tier. And it's just insane what Panasonic did to over-engineer that tablet. There's a lot that we could learn from that as just a general consumer review channel. Like there are things about that that I really wish we could get on more consumer grade gear. And it would be cool if some of that tech could trickle down, but it's never going to happen if we only say, oh, but Sam Apple is the only way that you can make a product. You're just going to make it exactly like Sam Apple and charge less. That's how you succeed, except that you'll fail. So to follow that up, I also did a live stream setup with the Xperia Pro, but it's also kind of in line with if you're interested in really trying to do more with your phone. If you're curious, you know, there is a lot of stuff that your phone can do fairly well, like broadcast on services like Streamlabs and StreamYard. So I hooked up the Sony A7 S3 and I, you know, fired up in a browser, in a smartphone browser, I fired up StreamYard and did a live broadcast just to see what it would look like. And let me tell you, that is the easiest, most straightforward, and nicest looking broadcast I think anyone could create. It was camera, phone, a small LED light panel, and a really cheap one at that. And then I used my KZ ES4, $20 earbuds, just for the little microphone on those earbuds. I've never pulled off a mobile broadcast over LTE that looked anything like that. That looked so good. So good. And that setup is so much lighter than if you're trying to connect a camera as a webcam, use a laptop or some other kind of computer. Like right now, I've got my Panasonic attached to this full desktop rig. It makes so much sense. Turning this little pocket computer into some kind of broadcast brain. Just so good. Oh, Muhammad, thank you. I will imbibe and take a quick drink of water here. Boing Bite is saying hello. Simon says, Hypno, I completely agree with that. New ideas, unless mainstream Apsung. Again, I feel like our conversations can be a little more nuanced than that. Man, Gary, you are blowing it up. And Matt, Tyler, oh, another subscription, man. Thank you so much. Again, I really do appreciate what's going on. And like I said at the top of the show, I don't want this to just all be the cranky pants Juan complains about reviewing. I watched a video last night and it was kind of breaking down some of the psychology behind certain trends like, I don't have a good way to get into this. This is a very hard transition into something that's only sort of moderately related to what we're talking about. But it was this really kind of insightful look at the history of climate change denial, the insane amount of money that fossil fuel industry has poured into creating disinformation campaigns, and how easy it's been to discredit some of the higher profile people speaking out against these trends, the warning us of the dangers of climate change. And it focused for a short period on Al Gore. And Al Gore, throughout a good significant chunk of his political public career, climate change was one of his things. It culminated in an Inconvenient Truth. But of course, immediately, that depiction of Al Gore was savaged by people mocking the sort of dour man who was sort of a wet blanket and was trying to point out that, you know, maybe the way that we're doing things and the industrial pollution isn't such a good idea. And I think there are more people that can probably quote lines from South Park's, you know, man, bear, pig depiction of Al Gore than can actually quote anything from An Inconvenient Truth or anything that Al Gore has actually said about the topic of climate change. And that's disappointing. Like, it's always easy to sit on the sidelines and mock someone that's trying to at least like showcase or point out like, hey, there's a problem here. You know, there's a problem with social media. There's a problem with how manipulated our content is. There's a problem with how advertising is now sort of ingrained in our own consumer data. But instead, it's just way easier to sit back on reddit.com/r/android and go, but it's not popular. And that other YouTuber said, oh, but it's not good enough. And it's galling. It's exhausting. You want to be able to say like, hey, there's something you should at least check out over here. Nuh-uh. Oh, we've got a hype train. What? Hype train, sub, gift, or use bits to get to the next level. What is up? McCorcoran 3, to be fair, South Park did give Al Gore his day in a later episode. He was like, I told you man, bear, pig was real. Yeah, how much farther away from that was that though? You know, South Park does this like, this enlightened centrism. Basically, everyone is dumb but us sitting on the sideline making fun of people who care about things. And that's fine. I mean, South Park is a fun show. It's funny. But after a point, it's like you stand for nothing. You mean nothing. And you encourage this, like, this, you know, nerdcore people snickering in the back of the room, making fun of everyone, but then they don't ever participate. And it's old, it's tired. I talk about gadgets because I want to talk to people who care. If you don't care, I don't want you to watch my videos. I don't want you to clog up my comments and waste space from people who do care. So it's, Hey folks, are you getting bored of the current collection of tech and geek commentary on the internet? Is the discussion of new electronics feeling a bit stale? Do you want to find some fresh voices to add to your subscription queue? Check out the community on r/glowingrectangles on Reddit. Now, this subreddit was built to help new voices in the tech community find more audience, and we need your support. Sharing, commenting, and those precious, tasty upvotes. Reddit can radically help a content creator expand their reach. Do you know a producer who deserves more attention? Do you just want to find fun new stuff? Head on over to reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles and share or browse to your heart's content. Once again, reddit.com/r/glowingrectangles, and let's build something cool together. You folks, I mean, again, this hitting level two on this hype train. I can't thank you enough. This is rad. You're forcing me to be better at Twitch, and I absolutely love it. So thank you very much. The last bit of housekeeping, as we just kind of move through and we're looking at the last couple minutes of that hype train there. The video we're going to be spending some time talking about was a showdown that I did. The Pixel 5 camera has Google failed to keep up. And just, again, it's another example of how disappointed I've been in the conversation. When The Verge puts out a review on the new Galaxy phones saying, Google's reliance on old camera sensors just and computational photography just can't live up to these new sensors on iPhones and Galaxies. That's incorrect. It's incorrect. If you're not going to show samples and show your work, show how this advantage of a larger sensor on a phone that costs upwards of $400 more than a Pixel 5, if you can't show me $400 more benefit, then I feel you are wrong. What? Hype! Level 2 hype complete. You guys are rad. I love you all so much. That was fun. Ah, I love it. Well, and McCorkran, you know, who needs a micro SD card in 2021? Again, it was like as soon as Samsung got rid of MagStripe and micro SD cards, it was a bunch of high profile tech influencers tripping over themselves to be the first at, I'm not bothered. I'm not bothered that they're getting rid of features on Galaxy S series phones. It doesn't bother me because I can always spend more on all of the other gadgets in my, you know, gadget ecosystem. And I'm happy to spend more because they're focusing on improving this experience. And you're like, no, it's less phone. You're paying more for less phone. Stop it. Stop doing that. Stop being that guy. Vasicos, apparently all people shoot raw now. From Dave Burns, but MagStripe is insecure, one, and my gas station still doesn't have NFC. Well, and it bothers me too, because like MagStripe is still on the Exynos. What the heck? We need it here in the United States because we're way behind on NFC deployment for payments. Like, if you were going to keep it on one phone, you would keep it on the United States version. But nope, no, it doesn't bother The Verge. So you're fine. As long as it doesn't bother an editor at a major publication, you're good, right? Blue Malicious, all these reviewers saying they never even use an SD card, but review around 15 to 20 phones a year and are constantly swapping out phones. Yeah, I mean, because the thing that I want to point to and what I'm trying to highlight a little bit more aggressively in some of my videos is I don't see a benefit to owning a nice phone unless your behavior is trying to get more use out of that phone. If you're still doing the same things you've been doing for the last 5 years, shop at the entry level. You know, in that like $200 to $400 range in the United States. And again, even that's kind of like the privilege of living in the United States where a $200 phone is entry level. But shop down there. I mean, I've been seeing people in my comments picking up the Nord N10 for under $200. Are you kidding me? Under $200 for that hardware is insane. Like, that is such a good buy. And is already like a 5G capable handset, has a good screen. If you caught my audio deep dive, the Nord could perhaps be a sleeper audiophile phone. Maybe. If only there was a reviewer who would occasionally show some headphone jack testing and some bar graphs and some frequency response graphs on the performance of this audio playing hardware. Could be interesting kind of content. So there is no benefit to shopping higher unless you're looking to drive that experience more. The only thing that I see from these tech reviewers that talk about $1,000 phones, and they're only using them like basic smartphone computing, like, oh, I'm going to do a speed test and open up Snapchat. And you're like, why? Why would you do that? What benefit does that have to the conversation? But then you look around. A tech YouTuber probably has a nicer camera. If they're editing videos on the regular, they probably have some type of nicer computer. It's very likely they're floating in between different alternative computing devices like laptops and tablets. You can afford in this ecosystem to only use that nicer phone just for covering the basics. But it's no better. It's the same experience as like a Pixel 4a or a TCL 10 or a Nord N10. You don't get more for your money unless you really do more with your money. What? Hype train level 2 emote go. Woo woo. All right, Alice Bockley's telling me to stretch. I should totally do that. Ah. Yeah. And Simon says, Hypno, that's absolutely accurate. When LG finally drops the quad DAC, watch them get absolutely slaughtered for it. And again, all of these tech influencers have been telling us that that's not a draw. I mean, don't forget, I mean, even back to the LG V30. Who was it? It was Android Police, David. David wrote this addition to his V30 review talking about how this was just some audio trickery, like a makes the music sound good filter. Completely doesn't know audio. Didn't bother to test it. Didn't look at any performance. Didn't look at anything. But he had an opinion which was wrong. And he just felt like it was the right time to kind of savage a truly premium feature on an LG phone, because who really cares? Am I right? So again, they're going to complain about losing something like that, but they never supported it in the first place. Look at, you know, when people did their end of the year 2020 videos, LG not winning anything, right? You could give LG the gimme award, right? The best audio phone. It costs you nothing as an influencer to say something nice about LG. It costs you zero. And it would still be more intellectually honest than saying things like, well, LG's the master of none. No, they are legit the master of audio. They win at audio. Gabaletta totally nailed it. It's the same when reviewers panned the HTC U11 for the squeeze feature, but praised the Pixel for the squeeze to call the Google Assistant. And again, it's so fluid. Watch them move the goalposts back and forth. You know, I didn't actually particularly like the squeeze feature, but you know, complaining, the Pixel 4 had this hand gesture thing where you could like wave it. For the Pixel 4 reviews, it was a gimmick, not worth it. There are Pixel 5 reviews where they complain about not having other cool experimental hardware like that in the Pixel 5, completely ignoring the fact that the Pixel 5 cost less and was a 5G capable phone. But now we're going to complain that it's missing a feature that they complained about on the Pixel 4. And the game is not fun when it's so blatantly obvious how rigged it is. And it's lame. It's super lame. From Blue Malicious, but one, they need a company to bash so they can't be accused of shilling for everyone. Here's the deal. I'm probably not going to spend a lot of time publicly talking about the Galaxy S21. I'm hoping to get the basic S21 for just a short loaner and do camera and audio videos for the Patreon. That's like the main thing I'm focused on. I spent some time with the Note, so I know what the 108 megapixel sensor kind of feels like, and I kind of want to get a better sense for their more mainstream options, you know, kind of where we were, Galaxy S20 FE to Galaxy S21. And I don't feel like I personally have a lot to contribute to this conversation beyond, I think it's less phone. So there's probably only going to be a very short editorial, an opinion piece on the phone. I'm not going to do my normal super deep dives. I'm not that interested. It's not doing it for me. So, In kind of highlighting this, this notion of like we need losers, right? It's a completely backwards way of looking at a market. Competition doesn't mean I look at the sales numbers for Samsung and they sell the most, so I implicitly make them the winner in every conversation. Looking at competition means I can highlight a small demographic of people who might like something like a Surface Duo. And I can talk to them directly and say, hey, these are all the things that you're going to dig. There are some things that you're not going to like. And it's a radical concept. There is nothing. I mean, we say this a lot. There's nothing else quite like it. No, there's literally nothing like this. It's going to be super foreign. It's going to be mega weird. But I think you're going to dig it. And I'm talking to like 73 people in a llama, you know, like, but those people deserve the same kind of encouraged conversation as all the people that were just going to buy an iPhone anyway and weren't really into this conversation other than to have a tech reviewer pat them on the back for making a smart purchasing decision. And that's those are the people I'd rather talk to. I'd rather talk to people that are actually looking at seeking and encouraged by competition. It's not how to be successful on YouTube. It is a good way to fail on YouTube. I'm way behind on the chat. You guys are cooking right now, and I love it. McCorcoran, the amount of stuff that the Pixel 5 got for having a slightly weaker chip was immeasurably worse than the backlash the tech reviewers are giving Samsung on all of the removed features. Hell, they practically crediting them for removing the features. See, that's just it. If you base your commentary on reacting to the bias of your audience, you don't stand for anything. I can still easily tell you, I think glass back phones are stupid. I don't like screen disrupting elements like notches and hole punches. These things don't change. It's just I don't have opportunities to buy alternatives. You know, it's I get so excited about a Sony Xperia 1 Mark II, but I want it to have a removable battery and a plastic back. You know, like the Xperia Pro looks really cool by comparison. But I'm not recommending the Xperia Pro as any kind of mainstream option. I want those features in an Xperia 1. I don't ever have to change. Like I've told you that. I told you that back in the LG Optimus Pro days. I don't care about reducing bezels. Bezels are practical. Bezels help you hold the device. I don't care about forehead and chin. I definitely don't care about having a little extra side bezel picture framing my display. I'm good. I'm good with that. I like a practical device. I would prefer having a Galaxy Active with chunkier sides. Let's do it. That phone is better for actual use, even though it doesn't look as pretty. I've never had to change my tune on that. I've never had to walk it back. I'm not sitting here going, oh, but Apple changed this thing, and now, wouldn't you know it, I've been won over, despite all of the odds against me. Apple has convinced me that this is the right way to do it. No. I'm good. From Doomer, why can't tech YouTubers get exposed for reviewer biases? You know, like any other content creator gets exposed for doing something wrong. I mean, it's only just a part of the conversation, though. It's because tech reviewing is more tech infotainment, right? For all of this pontificating and posturing about protecting average consumers, the conversation has spiraled. The conversation has shifted to like a very niche core. You go to like tech YouTubers and you see like hundreds of thousands of views on a video. I want you to think about that. Hundreds of thousands to a million views is not a lot considering the billions of phones that are sold. So this posturing of protecting average consumers is a conceit. It allows you to move the goalposts so that you can always kind of hide behind whatever your audience is already into. Then you confirm what you think the audience is going to like, what they're going to dislike. And then they feel good. They watch your videos. They share them on Reddit. They get upvoted because you're telling them what they want to hear. And it just cycles. If this were really about journalism, then there would be some kind of editorial or news team, some kind of fact checker, making sure this stuff was verified, was sourced, was sort of, you make a claim, you have to kind of back up that claim. But reviewing and news don't really go hand in hand. They don't really complement each other. It's an emotional experience. It's not a rational experience. Techies think they're being very rational. I'm making the wise choice because I know tech and I can regurgitate specs at the drop of a hat. But it's all emotional. And especially for a group of people that are often the outsiders in other communities, being the geek, you know, you want that feeling like you're sitting at the cool kids table. It's why I joined so many clubs. I was speech and debate. I was future problem solvers. I was in marching band. I was a theater geek. I needed to belong. I needed to find like-minded. I needed to be weird with other people who were weird like me. And so it's easy to kind of co-opt that sense of belonging and then mass market it, slap packaging and labeling on it, and, you know, spiral it on platforms like Facebook and YouTube. And it's sad. I feel like a real geek, and I'm going to be this gatekeeper. I hate gatekeepers, and I'm going to be one. I feel a real geek would care about competition, about people finding the exact right fit for their needs, about people finding the right fit for their budgets, rather than just celebrating being on the winning team. It's an insidious aspect of our current flavor of consumerism. And it's sad because I think a lot of people miss out. I think even those geeks that are totally in it and they know what they care about, there's a reason why we keep seeing these surveys. 9 out of 10 smartphone consumers see no benefit in upgrading their phones. Look at the forums, man. Look at these conversations. People like are very underwhelmed about the current state of technology right now, but they're not changing their behavior. They're not trying to get more out of their phones, and they're not looking at any alternatives because they also can't bear the idea of not being on a less popular team. And it's sad. It's a bummer. Oh, Squishy Man, I appreciate that. My favorite time watching Pocket Now was when you were there. I really do appreciate that. It was a lot of these kinds of conversations that kind of reinforced the idea that me and Pocket Now wasn't a good combo. It wasn't a good fit. And it's nothing on them. I mean, like, I still have very fond memories of working with that team. Jaime Rivera is my brother. I miss having drunken rambling, partly in Slavic conversations with Tony. I mean, that crew was great. I miss doing the podcast with Jules. Jules was such a weird producer, and his weird was kind of right up my alley. It was just my flavor. But, you know, between the Pocket Now audience and what Jaime was trying to accomplish, I was not the right voice for that channel. And it's also why I haven't tried in earnest jumping on any other phone team. Like, I really love the work that Nick is doing over at Fandroid. And he was kind enough to make an offer. Like, maybe I could do some editorials there. And I'm looking at what he's trying to accomplish, and me being a wet blanket Al Gore style would not be the right fit for him trying to rebuild what Fandroid is doing. And I look at some of the other outlets, like David Immel is going to go and work with MKBHD. And we're many of us going through another sort of round of existential crises. Like, where do we do? Where do we fit? What are we going to do? I mean, like, the notion that I'm going to take my style of commentary to another outlet, it just doesn't seem feasible right now. I'm kind of fine tanking my own YouTube channel. I don't like the idea of like driving away some of the core audience at like an Android Authority. Like, that's no one's going to enjoy that. I'm not going to enjoy it. The audience isn't going to enjoy it. The editors aren't going to enjoy it. We've got to do something else. So I'm going to go back to headphone reviewing. Ooh, McCorkran 3, what color hat should Juan wear next week? Actually, we could even do what kind of hat. Should I do a ball cap? Should I do a flat cap? Should I do a driver's cap? Should I do one of my pork pies? I could do short brim. Do like, I've got a linen pork pie, although I should probably try and get that cleaned. So, the Pixel 5, oh, I don't have a top hat. And I do have a beret somewhere, but I don't look as good in a beret as you think I might, considering how many flat caps I've worn. So I need to see if I can find the beret, though. Ooh, a sombrero. Yeah. I have it with my Folklorico boots somewhere. My Jarabe Tapatio was pretty formidable. I was actually a pretty good dancer back in the day. It's fun because my daughter's super into dance, and like I've started teaching her a little step and a little tap. And she's not quite rocking it. Like she likes to do a very lyrical ballet, improvisational kind of dance. She doesn't like me jumping on and saying structure and time and meter. You need to be on the beat. Because she's five, but I might need to work that a little harder. Folklorico boots were fun. It's a woodblock heel, so you're in heels, and in the toe in the heel, a fresh pair of boots. You take all of these tiny little like drywall style tacks, these little metal tacks. You tap them into the toe and the heel. That's how the boots are made. No one takes you seriously as a folklorico dancer until you can show them the bottom of your boots, where you have stomped and dug your toe and heel into the ground for so long that you've taken all of those little individual tack heads and you have polished them and smashed them into one smooth surface. My joints are awful. I have hip and knee problems like crazy because I did several years of folklorico dancing. Aditya Anil, you need a twirly thin evil villain mustache to go with the beret. JMX Warrior, I don't think we'd ever recognize him if we saw him without a cap. I've got a reel. Hold on. Do I have it on YouTube? It's unlisted if I do. So there's a lot of me in a hat, but there are also some of my not hat wearing news appearances. If you guys want to catch that. So, I mean, you can watch it. That's me doing news broadcasts and hosting events and stuff like that. I send that to other companies when I'm trying to pick up extra work on the side. And it's the funniness of being some kind of YouTuber in the 21st century. Dave Burns, are you not allowed to wear hats on the news? Oh, I wear hats all the time. Especially when I was doing Fox 11. So my Fox LA and the Fox Morning Show, I'd wear, you know, flat cap. I'd switch to a button up shirt just so I looked a little more presentable. But that's kind of my gig now, especially with crazy bad psoriasis. Like there are just some times where I get like really awful scarring right up at my forehead. And there's only so much makeup can do to hide that. So the hat became more of a necessary consistency. So if I'm having a really bad psoriasis flare up, I can almost always cover it. I mean, obviously you've seen like on the sides of my face, I've got some scarring happening right now on the side of my nose. But you know, I can touch that up a little. I can kind of conceal it. That's usually not too bad. It's when like the scarring kind of ripples through my hairline and you see like scabs forming at the top of my head. Not so great. So we put on a hat. Jillian Barbary. I've not gotten to meet Jillian Barbary. I shouldn't mention where it was. It was on one of the news shows. There was one of the female reporters. It wasn't me. But her demeanor was extremely flirtatious and it was very off-putting, like very kind of aggressive. Made me really uncomfortable.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, you would think, like, oh, showing some attention, or, oh, there's this beautiful woman who's on a news broadcast and she's talking, you know, like, when I'm there to, like, hey, here's a smartphone and you should be worried about your security. Like, there's something about, like, a different kind of vibe or flirtatious demeanor that can be very off-putting. The Fox LA host that I worked with, yeah, there were a couple, oh God, I'm spacing on names, but Maria is one of my favorites, and she does a lot of their weather reporting, for the morning hour. And she's just a badass. I've been working with her off and on for years. I met her through an old PR contact when I was doing some AT&T reporting. And I mean, like, we just fall into, like, old patter. She's one of those people. She's a little like Trisha Hershberger, where she's a gorgeous woman. You don't expect that she really knows her stuff as well as she does. And she can go off script at a moment's notice. She's always kind of got your back in the middle of a conversation. She knows when to let you ramble on a little bit more. She knows how to bring you back. When you see someone who's just incredibly good at what they do and making other people look good, it looks easy. It is so difficult. It's so much harder than you think it would be. hashtag some ladies guy. Not so much. One would wish, but, you know, that would have been Juan back in college. And even back then, I was kind of a doofus. So, who wants to talk about Pixel 5 cameras? Because I kind of feel like I promised results on Pixel 5 and stuff. We got a couple people. All right, we can kind of move on. So I used the Pixel 5 video as a way to complain, air my grievances about the current state of reviewing. Simon says, "No, I want to see how wrong I was." I am very excited. I mean, again, I consider this a critical victory. Lots of people got close. No one got all of the setups correct, which was exactly the point I was hoping to convey in the video. Like, I was really worried. Like, I'm going to put out this video and, like, everybody's going to totally obviously know and they're all going to be able to pick the Pixel. So what I did, I wanted to show, for anyone who hasn't seen the video, spoilers, the claim being made by The Verge is Google using a smaller camera sensor on the Pixel 5 means that it's hopelessly outclassed in a comparison against an S21 Ultra or an iPhone 12 Pro Max, because those phones use larger sensors. Okay, on the surface, that argument seems to make sense. The Verge has not provided any evidence of that claim. It's not like they've shot a couple photos side by side. It's really easy to rig a comparison. It's really easy to make it look like the Pixel is just so woefully outclassed. I even show it in my Pixel 5 camera video. One raw file to another raw file. Smaller sensor, that could be a problem. I mean, that's all you need to do. Suddenly everyone now has a talking point and they can point to that part of a video and go, see, we knew it. We knew Google fell behind. But they didn't even do that. They didn't even give us that. They just said, I'm not even going to bother trying to show the differences because Google is so hopelessly outclassed. And in tweeting about it, got a bunch of other tech influencers, techies who should know better, all jumping on to say, oh, totally agree. Yep, computational photography, it's done for. Google needs to step up. They're falling behind. The realities of camera tech, so much different. It does not resemble the techie conversation at all. It is so much more nuanced. I saw calling out another influencer who always just sort of sides with more megapixels. Again, resolution, it's a different conversation when we move from sensor to sensor to sensor. Just a quick interjection here, folks. I love highlighting good work and talented people. Producers and writers who deserve more attention. So here's a quick word from someone making cool stuff on the internet, and I hope you check out what they have to offer.
I started Tech Potato with a vision. I'd already been covering processors and technology for 10 years as senior editor for Inantech, but only through the written word. With today's media so diverse, I chose to one-up my vision and move to video and explain the nuance of complex topics. Hi, my name's Ian Cutteris, and I'm Chief Spud at Tech Potato. The goal at Tech Potato is to have fun, to talk about areas of the technology industry that aren't always covered. Sometimes there are non-obvious aspects to a topic which doesn't always come across in written media, and that's where I strike. The channel is also there to shine a light into the areas that most end users don't even know exist. There's also a tongue-in-cheek joke. Processors are called chips, and just like a bag of chips, I like to get my teeth into these things, hence Tech Potato. The thumbnails are stupid, but the content is real. If you're interested about how things in this technology industry work, or for reports on behind-the-scenes events, plus some classic British humour, then head on over. You'll be welcome with open arms.
So, I wanted to show this in a practical way. And I'm also a little over making Samsung the standard. I don't believe Samsung is a standard. I don't believe they deserve to be held up as an objective point of reference that phones should be graded by. They sell the most. That's the only frame of reference that I think a conversation as Samsung as standard means anything. And even then, I don't put a ton of stock into sales numbers because a phone being popular doesn't mean it's going to be the right fit for my family and friends. You know, if they have specific needs, but this phone's more popular. Yeah, but I want a phone that's smaller. No, you want a phone that's more popular. How much of a douchebag would I be? So, Brayden, Samsung color science just doesn't do it for me. It shouldn't do it for more people. Samsung color science is miserable. The raw files from Samsung's faux 108 megapixel sensor, those raw files are gorgeous. So if you do edit raw, there is something to be said for picking up an ultra. Do you edit raw? I do, but do you? I wanted to show this off. And again, I'm kind of regurgitating. Those of you in this live stream have probably seen the video, and I apologize. It's also for anyone jumping in or anyone listening to the audio file after the fact. Obviously, it's a Pixel 5 is one of the phones. And then I wanted to show a sensor that was similar to the hardware on an iPhone 12 Pro Max. So it's a larger sensor, but it's the same resolution. So the Pixel 5 is a 12 megapixel shooter. Okay. To showcase a sensor size improvement, I held up an Xperia 1 Mark II, also a 12 megapixel sensor, but it's bigger. We're talking phone optics. So yes, it is a bigger sensor, but we're not going to see the differences like between my Micro Four Thirds camera and, you know, a full frame Sony A series, right? Like if I put two photos of these cameras side by side, I think you're going to see a clear difference in the optics, the depth of field, the focusing action. You know, Panasonic G9 to a $4,000 Sony body, you're going to see very clearly those differences. I was really happy to see that not a lot of people could clearly find those differences between the Pixel 5 and the Xperia 1. In fact, it was those two phones that were most often confused for each other in my test setups. So then I wanted to show something that was going to be a bit more Samsung adjacent. The iPhone 12 Pro Max has a larger sensor, but it's a lower resolution. We've got these new technologies out that combine groups of subpixels. So Samsung can put out a marketing one sheet saying 108 megapixels. And that is technically correct. But when you shoot that JPEG, it's going to squish all of that data down for a 12 megapixel final output. It's 9:1 subpixel binning, subpixel compressing to get a 12 megapixel output. In the United States, the phone that's closest to that is the OnePlus 8 Pro. The OnePlus 8 Pro has a 48 megapixel sensor, which is just a hair smaller than the 108 megapixel sensor in the Note 20 Ultra and in the Galaxy S21 Ultra. And it combines 4 pixels to create one larger image photo site. So I've got my setup. I've got a phone that's a little bit more. I mean, again, we're just talking sensor size because that's what tech reviewers said mattered. Not software, not the computational photography. No, no, no. Google has fallen behind because their sensor's smaller. So I've got a phone that's similar in hardware to an iPhone 12 Pro Max, and I've got a phone that's not too far behind an S21 Ultra. I shot a bunch of setups, I shot a bunch of comparisons, I didn't tell people what phone was what, and wouldn't you know it, no one could pick the pixel in every single setup. I felt really good about that. McCorkerin 3, the Mi Note 10, has a 108 megapixel camera, sells for 300-ish on eBay. So Aditi Anil, alternative title, does size matter? It does. And I can, and I show in the video, it does matter. How does it matter? So again, tech reviewers, the group of people most likely to say, oh, well, I mean, average consumers, they just like point and shoot. You know, they're not going to dig into settings. They're not going to use manual modes. It's just the real, you know, like we just need it to be, it just needs to just work. Does it just work enough? Is it just working or is it just working? Does it just work? Okay. If it's just a shutter button press, you see so little advantage from moving up in sensor size. Not a lot. I'll tell you one thing that I didn't include in the comparison. The one advantage, if we compare the night mode from the OnePlus 8 Pro to the night mode on the Pixel 5, the OnePlus 8 Pro was able to pull out a slightly brighter night mode image at roughly 2/3 the amount of time it took the Pixel 5. So the Pixel 5 in my darkest setup was like a 6-second exposure. So you got to hold still for like 6 seconds as the phone overscans to try and pick up additional light. And the OnePlus 8 Pro was able to do it in like 3.5 to 4 seconds. That's an advantage. That is a tangible hardware advantage. The final shots, not as different as you would think. All right, so I've got the results here. Let's go ahead. I apologies. I'm doing through this through OBS, and because some of these were raw files, OBS wigged out. I mean, it crashed OBS when I was trying to pull up some of the image files, and that's definitely an issue with my setup here. So I can't go through all of the individual images, but I've got all of the crops. So I tried to crop where the focus was, and we can at least look at those, and I can do a screen share on this too. So here, let me pull up image slideshow. So this was the first setup. And again, apologies to folks listening to this in the audio version of the broadcast. What we're looking at right here are 3 crops of my stuffed dog Rex. Rex has been with me since college. He was a gift after doing a play. I wrote a play about a talking dog. And so a friend of mine at the time got me a little stuffed dog to celebrate producing a play. So A, B, and C, we're looking at just the crop on where the focus was. And the focus was specifically on the eyebrow just above the right eye. Well, the dog's left eye, but as we're looking at it, the eye on the right side. So real quick in the chat, A, B, or C, which phone do you think was the Pixel 5? We're going to play this game in real time. Aditi Anil saying C. And only Aditi. Okay. All Greg is saying C. Awesome Possum. Hickey. Okay. This was the one that was most correctly guessed. Best of our week is saying A. Gary the Fireman is saying A. This one was the most correctly guessed because I actually said in setup 3 when I was talking about depth of field, which phone was kind of which. So if you were paying attention, it absolutely was C. So the dog on the far right, that is the Pixel. And you can also see subtle differences, because I'm trying to keep the distance the same in all of these setups. So you can see the subtle differences in focal length, in the sort of field of view. There's just a tiny crop in from phone C. And so when we go to the next setup, this is the raw files. Let me click there. So now these are raw images. This is the same. These are the raw images from the same cameras. So C is still the phone. I mean, I don't know about y'all, but I'm looking at no computational software beyond like what happens at the camera firmware level, which I can't control for. All three of these shots were taken from Manual Camera Pro. So they're normalized. It's not like, you know, it's tricky to say. I don't know if the Pixel camera hardware does its own raw manipulation before it sends a raw image to a third-party camera app. So I can't account for that. And honestly, I can't see tremendous differences between the raw images shot from the Pixel app and the raw images shot from a third-party app. But I tried to normalize. Same camera app for all three phones. And I don't know. I mean, like, I feel like these are all pretty similar for a dim indoor shot. Phone C is still the Pixel in this setup. It's the only time I made them the same. From here on, each phone changed for each setup. So, larger camera sensor, kind of not much of an advantage. Which one is truer to the white balance? So in this setup, I would say phone A, which was the OnePlus 8 Pro, was truer to the lighting conditions that I have in my office. Phone B, which is the Xperia 1 Mark II, just a touch warm. Again, I'm trying to keep really cool lighting in my office, and I like to shoot really, really cool. So it's a little warm. Especially for that being backlit, but the Pixel was too cool. Like that really doesn't look like the lighting in my office. And again, we're looking at raw files. So again, there's that one step removed sensor data for how it might have been manipulated. We can go back to the other shot and you can kind of see phone A, pretty close. Phone C, also really close. So it cools off a little when Google goes, it warms up a little when Google processes the raw file from the Pixel 5. And from Aditya, an accurate representation of how most indoor photos might be taken. Yeah, it was pretty dim. I purposely tried to make it a dim indoor lighting. It's just one of my little China ball lamps, so the lighting is really soft and it's kind of backlit. So moving right along, the next... File that we want to take a look. Oh, you know what? I can actually just show this here real quick too. Let's go into here, and that this is a depth of field comparison, and this is one of the tangible benefits. So you can kind of see by the pup's ear that my daughter's finger painted coffee mug that says "Best Dad Ever." When we really move in on that, or "World's Best Dad," excuse me, you can kind of see how at this distance. The Pixel 5, the lettering is just a little clearer, it's a little sharper, and that it's a little blurrier on the OnePlus 8 Pro. So this is the extreme difference between one of the largest camera sensors on a phone and the supposedly old camera sensor. Like, I wouldn't even be able to track that on a mirrorless camera. It's less than a stop difference in performance. You know, when you go to adjust the aperture on a proper mirrorless camera and you're like, well, is it f1.4 or f1.6? That's about the practical difference that we're seeing in the optical performance. Maybe a little bit more, like maybe the difference between f1.4 and f1.8, you know, like this is not even a full stop difference in practical depth of field. It helps. It absolutely does. When I show you this image here, and you see that, oh, it is a little bit blurrier on the OnePlus 8 Pro. If you know what you're trying to craft as a content creator, you can absolutely use that to your advantage. if you're shooting, like tech influencers say average consumers shoot, oh, you just need to push the shutter button and it just works. It's got an it just works quotient of 113, which is better than the it just works quotient of this other phone, which is only a 97. If you aren't maximizing for that hardware difference, you're not going to get any benefit out of that. And it can make your autofocus trickier to lock on what you're trying to keep in focus. Simon says, Hypno, I've seen from reviews and comparisons that Sony's HDR and exposure can be an issue in point and shoot mode. It can be. And that's actually what we're going to see in our very next setup. So moving right along, in setup number four, here, let me get back into the slideshow. We've got an outdoor shot. So real quick, A, B, or C, which one is the Pixel? Aditya Anil, does the it just works quotient work similarly to the feels good in the hand one? Okay, all Greg is saying A. We've got Abacan saying A. Simon says Hypno is B. A, B. Gabaletta says A is a Pixel. Braden, Loki Ted saying B. Boingbite is saying B. Standard is saying B. Hakey is saying A. ER and Gary are saying A. In this setup, phone A is the Pixel. Now, here's one of the dead giveaways. When you let this phone shoot full auto, look at the sort of texturing and the highlights around the pup's nose. That is characteristic. That is trademark Pixel HDR. Phone B is the OnePlus 8 Pro. And you can see it's actually doing a pretty good job. That is a very bright hotspot on a white stuffed animal. But I also think OnePlus butchered the white balance. The B photo is way too cool. Phone C is the Sony. And so that kind of goes back into what we were talking about. In full auto modes, the Sony still acts like a standalone camera. If you aren't really on top of your metering, the Sony will let you fail. The Sony will clip out the highlights, and you can see just how there's less information approaching the white spot on the pup's nose. But, and I wish I could go back and show you the full-sized images, in bright Southern California warm lighting, the Pixel was too warm. The Xperia nailed it. I mean, it was perfect. Like, that looked exactly like how that scene looked to my eye. And then the HDR manipulation on the OnePlus just made everything like kind of blue. It's like super cool for being in direct warm sunlight. So the Pixel was a little too warm. The OnePlus was a lot too cool. The Sony was like right on. So again, what is it that I'm trying to accomplish? If I'm trying to accomplish capturing like a nice depiction of that scene, I actually think I'd kind of dig on the Sony style the best, though I'd want to stop it down a third of a stop, just to kind of rein in some of the hot spot on the stuffed animal. It's never just one thing. It's always more complicated than just, well, it's got the best colors. I mean, if you really like colors, then you really need to shoot on a Samsung. And you're like, no, Samsung's HDR processing is vomit inducing. All right, moving right along, let's get into some low-light stuff. Now, this was one of my favorites. If you know your phone lenses, this one should be really easy. These are not night mode photos. These are handheld, auto, and I purposely disabled how the Pixel 5 will try to force a night mode shot in lower light conditions. So A, B, or C, which one is the Pixel? People saying B. Let's see, Raymondit, All Greg, Rami, Simon says Hypno, ER, Gabaletta. Aditya is saying A, bucking the curve. All right. All right, Pixel is A. Aditya is saying C has to be the Sony. All right. So this is setup number 5. Phone A is the Xperia 1 Mark II. Phone B is the Pixel 5. And phone C is the OnePlus 8 Pro. So we got a lot. Again, pretty good. Pretty good looking out. Again, looking at the lens performance, the larger sensor, larger aperture, and then looking at the internal reflections, I was actually really impressed with what the OnePlus did with the immediate reflection of the street lamp. Like, you look at the phone on the far right, you don't see the same kind of harder ghost immediate reflection. On phone B, the Pixel, if you know that it's got a smaller sensor and a smaller aperture, you would see a tighter and more defined internal reflection pointing this phone directly into a street lamp. And phone A, it's kind of splitting the difference. Phone A is the Xperia, actually doing a reasonably good job of handling what's kind of a tricky lighting condition. You know, shooting into a light bulb is not easy, and something that we see a lot in street lamps. For iPhones, you get a lot of those hard line flares and ring flares when we start stepping up to these larger sensors and larger apertures. I think Apple lens design is actually not that good, especially for how lens flare, the way that they lens flare. If we're trying to judge the aesthetics of the bokeh and the lens flares, that's all personal opinions. That is my opinion. I don't think Apple does that very well. I think it can be very distracting. And Samsung had kind of a smorgasbord of lens flaring problems. The Note 20 Ultra has like every single one. It'll ring flare and halo flare around a street lamp. It'll also line flare if you catch it at an angle. It'll ghost and reflect just like a Sony will. I mean, it's like you get every single problem on Samsung's lens. And Dave Burns, I only know because of the lens flares. All right. But we want to push this even darker. So let's go into screen share one more time. And now this is a night mode. And I got to tag myself. I did not, because I did this handheld. I didn't set this up on a tripod. I didn't get phone C at closer to the same distance that I got phone A and B. I did have it off just a little for how the actual focal lengths should represent. But again, same thing, A, B, or C. Now, this is a super dark, ultra low light, night mode photo. And again, if you know your post-processing, it should be easier to kind of guess and grade which one is the Pixel. I'm seeing most people saying B. Al Greg is saying C, the darker image. Alice Bockley is saying A. Gabaletta is saying A. Aditya Anil is saying A. Okay. Gary the Fireman saying B. A is the OnePlus 8 Pro. B is the Pixel 5. And C is the Xperia 1 Mark II. So this one is all about computational raw stacking and image manipulation. And if we know anything about the Sonys, Sony as a brand now represents the least manipulated image directly out of a camera app. Even for their low light night mode, they do not slather on nearly as much when it comes to adjusting a photo. So a lot of people on the YouTube video pegged phone C as the Pixel 5 because it was the darkest image. It's actually the Sony because it's a dark scene. Sony's not going to try and make it look like daylight. That would be fake. But when we go back into this image, you can kind of see in the background. One of the things that's really helpful, and some other people are pointing it out too, is when we're looking at like image sharpening and the amount of information you can pull from a smaller sensor, the clouds in the background are actually the thing that kind of help point out which phone is which. The OnePlus 8 Pro blowing up this night scene, making it a little warmer, adding more color, and especially because the sensor genuinely can pick up more color data. That's sort of how you would determine in a side-by-side. The Pixel, everything's a little whiter it's a little lighter. There's less color information coming from the lighting because this phone, this tree trunk, is in such dark shadow. It's kind of making up some of this information, even though the lighting information would lean warmer. But then it's kind of highlighting and brightening up elements in the background, like the clouds. So again, it's kind of the practical difference looking between those two. What OnePlus is doing with computational brightness in their photography is kind of astounding. What they're able to achieve on the OnePlus 8 Pro for artificially boosting light and painting in color is kind of incredible. I really like what their take on bright night mode is over what Samsung has been doing. And it's a more effortless shoot. I mean, at least it was against the Note 20. Obviously, I haven't done a deep dive on any of the Galaxy S21s. But when I took the Note 20 Ultra out, the autofocus was miserable and the night mode photos took longer to handhold. So there are some, I do this close up on a lock that's kind of clipped to a fence. It was incredibly difficult to get a clear night mode shot from the Samsung. It was so easy getting the exact same shot from a OnePlus 8 Pro. And I think the OnePlus 8 Pro did a better job with the street lamp color of the lighting and really painting in the right tone and making it look a little prettier than what Samsung was able to achieve. That's a very niche kind of use, but it's one of those things where, oh, OnePluses have terrible cameras. No, they're actually doing pretty good. It's just they're not going to be as universally, casually easy to shoot with as like an iPhone. And even iPhones, I don't think they've improved as much as people are trying to make it sound like they have. Apple doing computational photography actually walks away from some of the things I used to love about iPhone photography. All right, last one. So let's go back into screen share, and we've got the Evil Eye portrait. Now, this is back to a normal photo. This is not a night mode photo. A, B, or C, I'm shooting this from the rear camera. This is not from the selfie camera. My arm is extended at full length, so I can't really compose the shot from the viewfinder. I'm just doing it from muscle memory. And I think I got pretty close to positioning all three photos. So Raymondit is saying A, the Pixel 5 is A, Rami is saying C, Doomer is saying A, Allgreg is saying A. I mean, again, now that I've been kind of spelling this stuff out, I feel like you guys should be able to grab the right phone a little bit easier. Simon says Hypno is saying B, Braden is saying B, Abakan saying B, Heike is saying A. So, phone A is the Pixel 5, phone B is the Xperia 1 Mark II, and phone C is the OnePlus 8 Pro. And when I really overlay A and C, even though there is a ridiculous hardware advantage for the OnePlus 8 Pro, the actual performance is super close. The grain on the Pixel shot is just a little less pleasant because we're in such hard, contrasty, dark conditions. When I'm really zeroing in on, I mean, like, look at these two shots critically. Both phones are even blowing out almost the exact same strip of brightness on my nose. The highlight under my eye is just a tiny bit different between those two performers. I feel like the OnePlus 8 Pro did a better job of balancing texture against noise, like on my hoodie, like if you look down at my collar, but look at like the Pixel kind of saturating up the blue of that hoodie as compared to the slightly more muted look on the OnePlus 8 Pro. I mean, it's just crazy. Now, what's interesting is in between when we've got the Xperia 1 Mark II, the Xperia leaned against the color of the light. My face is a little truer to my natural skin tone. That is not a yellow street lamp on my face, where phone A and C, the Pixel and the OnePlus, are producing a warmer shot based on that lighting. I thought it was interesting that in that one setup, where the Xperia was so good at daylight conditions, nailing the white balance on California sun, under artificial lighting, it erred towards a more accurate depiction of what I would look like under white lighting. So again, it's just a trip. You know, cameras aren't this one thing where, oh, well, I mean, if you really want the accurate white balance, you got to get an iPhone. No. As soon as the lighting conditions change, you have different criteria by which these things should be judged. Lower light white balance performance is different than bright daylight white balance performance. From Gabaletta, the OnePlus overexposed your cap, though. Did it? I feel like the OnePlus exposed my cap the darkest. I think it underexposed it, because you can't even see as many of the sweat stains in the side of the brim. Yeah, now I would say the Pixel actually pushed my ball cap the brightest. I mean, again, I don't know what this looks like over the stream, and we are definitely compressing this information pretty hard. Especially from what I can see and looking at all of these, I feel like the OnePlus 8 Pro actually did a better job of managing some of the shadow detail in my jacket and in my ball cap. Excuse me. I'm almost done with this mug of water. So, I had so much fun putting this together because I actually expected, there to be significantly more visible differences. When I start explaining like, oh, well, this is what I'm looking for in this shot, and you can kind of see when you look at these conditions, like it gets a little bit easier to guide the discussion, right? It's a little easier to pick the Pixel when I can kind of inform a little about what makes each of these phones different. But just putting it out there, I had three people get all but one phone right. And then almost everybody else was at least two or more phones off.
Hey, podcast listeners. I work really hard to find mutually beneficial ways to support production on my various distribution platforms. Instead of just running ads on this podcast and hoping they don't annoy you, I want to find products or services that you really will get something out of and that can help fund my production. While I do talk about some of those items in ads throughout this podcast, I've never created one easy-to-view master list of my current partnerships until now. Sorry, I couldn't help myself. If you'd like to help contribute, support production of this podcast and my various videos and reviews, head on over to somegadgetguy.com. At the top, there's going to be a link for Support Some Gadget Guy, and you can see what my current partnerships are. At the time this podcast was recorded, in addition to my Patreon, we can hook you up with a $10 voucher for shopping a new OnePlus, save 20% on some One More headphones, sign you up for Google Fi service, Amazon affiliate links, Audible, or you can grab a megapixel coffee mug of your very own. Savory, delicious megapixels. Head on over to somegadgetguy.com, support banner on the top right-hand side of my website, and hopefully you find something cool, something you like, while also kicking me a little extra scratch.
I feel I've got pretty good data now to suggest that the smartphone techie influencer opinion that sensor size is so critical to this conversation that we don't even need to show you samples from a Pixel at $400 less or more. It's about $400 less than the lower storage unit Galaxy S21 Ultra. Are you really getting $400 better photos? I don't think you are. I really don't think you do. Where that $400 really comes into play is at the fringe. There's a person in our Discord, O'Shea, and he joined the Discord and he was showing samples from a Nokia, a PureView, a Nokia 9. And he's since switched to a Note 20 Ultra. Now, I think I'm a pretty good photographer, but O'Shea is driving that Note 20 camera sensor like nothing I've ever seen from a mobile photographer. I mean, I wrote a book on mobile photography and he makes me feel like a novice. That is an individual who is taking the advantages of having spent over $1,100 on a phone and is really maximizing the potential of what that investment can mean. He is not casually just whipping a phone out of his pocket and pushing the shutter button because it just works. You know, he doesn't believe in an it just works quotient. He edits raw files from every camera that he shoots from. And it shows, like, his natural instinctive eye for composition and for post-processing is phenomenal. That's where you get your $400 advantage. If you try and make all of these ads, like, oh, it's revolutionary, we've maximized the camera sensor, it's incredible, and you shoot the exact same way, you're gonna get the same photos that you used to have on your older phone. So remember, every time you see one of those headlines, I believe they're correct. We took a survey. 9 out of 10 consumers don't believe there's any benefit in buying a new phone. They don't believe there's any, you know, exciting upgrade in buying a new phone. Of course they do. They've been told all you need to do is just point and shoot and you're done. And the phone's going to do everything for you and it's going to be amazing. Except that we can show it's kind of just gonna be the same. Well, and here's what's frustrating. So Gabaletta, all the pictures were great. What we are doing is nitpicking because we're tech nerds. Again, the nitpicking is a part of our entertainment. I enjoy it, right? Like we like kind of getting into the nitty gritty. But that's a different conversation than I'm just going to casually say this phone isn't even worth reviewing. And you just have to believe me and know that I'm right. That's not geeky. That's not nerdy. That's elitist and it's obnoxious. That's a gatekeeper. That's not what we're about. If you're watching a stream like this, I know it's not what you're about. But that kind of filters into the average consumer conversation. It's why general consumers don't listen to us anymore, is because Samsung marketing comes out and says that this is revolutionary. A bunch of tech influencers are tripping over themselves to just regurgitate what Samsung marketing said. And then the phone actually gets into an average consumer's hands and they don't see any difference. It's the same for them. No one along the way said, check this out, try this mode, dig into your settings. That's where the advantage is. No, you've got The Verge saying it's just clearly obvious how outclassed a smaller sensor is. And then they can't even show evidence of it. They can't even show a sample of it. So what game are we playing? Because we're not satisfying average consumers. They stopped listening to us. And people are out there buying these expensive phones and then getting kind of a little underwhelmed because they're not seeing these supposedly magical improvements. Blue Malicious One, I think you're missing the point. The goal of the original article, I really don't think, was to inform people about deficiencies in the Pixel camera. It was just to get clicks and make ad revenue. I think you nailed it. Blue Malicious, I feel so much better informed now. It was not about sort of an objective review, because I don't even have objective reviews. I straight up tell you why I like different products, why I prefer shooting on different things. Blue Malicious, O'Shea is amazing. Made me really want to pick up a secondhand Nokia 9. But again, it's not the Nokia. It's not. It's not the tool. It's the artist. Again, his style of post-processing. Because I like to shoot hard and dark and contrasty. He likes to shoot really bright and vibrant. And one of the fascinating things is, like, when I look at my work compared to his, one of his favorite things to do is purposely overexpose and then pull the highlights back so that he can boost color in the photo. One of my favorite things to do is to purposely underexpose so I crush all the shadows and I get hard contrasty elements between dark and bright. If you're just casually scanning through something like Instagram, O'Shea's photos just launch off your phone screen. My phone photos dig into the shadows and are very easy to overlook when you're scrolling through. But I still think they're kind of interesting. I think they're grainy. I like texture. I like noise. I like characteristics that are unique to that camera, to that element. O'Shea just, like, man, his photos are so bright. They're so vivid, but they don't feel gross and pukey like Samsung HDR. I can't say enough nice things because I my brain doesn't grok that. I don't edit as well when I'm trying to accomplish that. I don't like it personally, so I'm not good at it. From Al Spockley, when the S21 line came out, 99% of my feed was filled with iPhone 12 Max versus Galaxy S21 Ultra. And again, this is also another part of the problem. So I feel like if I make a comment in this chat room, how concerned are we really about the camera size on the Pixel 5? I think a lot of folks here, especially after the exercise that we just did, a lot of folks here are going to be like, kind of concerned. There are some things that I would appreciate. And I think we'd all agree it would be kind of cool to see what Google can do to their algorithms using a larger sensor. I would love to see Google train their Pixel camera algorithms on a sensor like the one found in the Xperia 1. I think we'd all agree, like, that could be kind of fun. The shallower depth of field, the fantastic autofocus performance, getting a little bit more light to play with. Imagine what they could do with night mode, cutting the capture time in half. That kind of stuff would be really cool. But in the general scheme of things, I don't know that Google's style of photography is going to be radically changed moving up to larger hardware. I think it's going to be pretty similar, but just a little snappier, just a little speedier. When we break down these kinds of differences and when we look at these kinds of comparisons, I find it to be almost a lie. It's almost intellectually dishonest on purpose to be so dismissive of the Pixel 5 for having a smaller sensor, but then be generally fine with the iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro. The iPhone 12 and the iPhone 12 Pro have the same size sensor. It's the same photo site size, 1.4 microns. It's the same resolution, 12 megapixels. Obviously, Apple does do a little refining tweak to the hardware. You can get about a half stop advantage out of an iPhone as compared to another similar sensored phone. That's not insane on a phone camera. It's not something I would factor into as a purchasing decision. You don't magically make the same size sensor so much better. You move to a different size sensor when you're really trying to maximize those differences. And even then, those differences are slight. Because look at how many photo comparisons we've seen between the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max where people kind of shrug. There's not that much difference. Oh, their iPhones are all pretty similar. iPhone photography, it's what you get. So an iPhone 12 Pro has a smaller sensor and starts at $999. And we're not concerned about that smaller sensor to the same degree we are about a Pixel, which starts at a price $200 less than an iPhone 12 Pro. And we conflate the 12 Pro and the 12 Pro Max by only talking about the biggest iPhone and not really detailing that Apple separates the sensor sizes between their two Pro products. How many people are out there thinking like, yeah, I want to get an iPhone Pro. You know, I kind of want to try the smaller one. But it's the same. They're both Pro phones. No. Apple doesn't even disclose that difference on the spec sheet on Apple.com. So it's not quite a lie. They're both 12 megapixel Pro camera experiences. But one's a little more Pro than the other. DTNL, not gonna lie, despite playing around with manual modes on my phone, I really don't think I do modern camera sensors justice with my photos. Keep shooting. I love it. It's such a fun hobby. From Squishy, but Juan, they are major tech news outlets. They must know what they're doing. They do. They're definitely accomplishing what they're setting out to do. Oh, we got a lot of praise in here for O'Shea. Again, it's like, I love highlighting his style of photography because it is so much different than how I shoot. Buy O'Shea and hold. Take that, GameStop. We're going to take it to the moon. Blue Malicious. I think making a purchase for the next 2 to 3 years, it is cool being able to get a bigger sensor, even if you put G-Cam on it for point and shoot. And again, G-Cam, I know a lot of people can port Google's camera over to other phones. It is not the same. The software, the app, is looking for a specific kind of camera sensor to apply the post-processing. Now, compared to like Sony's auto shooting, it probably will generally look better. But it's not a pixel. It's not the same. It is going to be different, and it is gonna do some unexpected things, some inconsistent things, because the software is looking for a specific camera sensor. Gary the Fireman, my normal upgrade cycle is 2 years, so I'm in line for the Pixel 6. Again, I'm really hoping. I am. I'm hoping that we get, you know, kind of like the rumors on LG with the V70, like another premium tier phone. I do hope that we'll get another Pixel that kind of shows us the top of the line chipset, a larger camera sensor, kind of catches up on some of these hardware improvements. But it's the thing about a Pixel is I don't think Google internally ever stopped looking at the Nexus, and they're a software platform product. I think you look at a Pixel because you care about Google services and updates and software and patching, and you're kind of on that mission with Google where having the crazy hardware isn't the gig. It's that you're looking for not only the sort of most pure Google version of all of these services, but that you're also looking at Google to add those new software services more aggressively. I don't think I can ever recommend a Pixel if you tell me what you care about is having the most bleeding edge hardware. I think they kind of learned a part of that lesson from Apple. You're always going to be a couple years behind the hardware trend, but then they are legitimately trying to look at what kind of backend support, what kind of refinement, what kind of new features. All of that stuff costs money. You know, it has to be factored into the price of a phone. So you're still going to pay a premium price tag, but you care about services and that accessibility. You don't care as much about all of the bells and whistles when it comes to the spec sheet, having the right bullet points going down the line. I think that's always going to be the dividing line. I don't suddenly see Google flipping the script on us, and then suddenly the Pixel is a feature-for-feature direct competitor against the most expensive Galaxy. I don't think it's going to happen. And then also, I wouldn't discount, especially, you know, depending on how you shoot, maybe a Pixel 6a or 5a, whatever it's going to be this year. The A series phones have been so solid. Blue Malicious, I'm interested to see if they put the Snapdragon 870 in the Pixel 6, a slight overclock of the 865, which could be a good fit. Really, what I hope we get is that neural core back. Google's custom hardware for image processing is still insanely powerful. So if you pick up a Pixel 4 or a Pixel 4 XL and you compare it for chewing up image data against an 865, the Pixel 4 will still often win against the most powerful phones from 2020. And like handily, like often in a 10% margin, even though it's got that old Snapdragon 855, Google's ability to manipulate image data is second to none. And so it is. I mean, like, I kind of wish we had Neural Core, the little ISP on the Pixel 5, because it would make this phone just a screamer. But again, this is more a play on pricing and keeping the other lifestyle features. It's not the powerhouse play, so it kind of makes sense. From Squishy Man, I know a fair amount of tech reviewers were a bit disappointed that the Pixel 5 wasn't a full-blown flagship, if I'm remembering the reviews right. So there's something fair there. Again, I mean, like, we're all in this chat room and we all dig on these kinds of tech conversations. I think it's fair to point out that the Pixel 5 is a less powerful phone than the Pixel 4. I do have, and I said this in my video, I do have some concerns about Google's naming strategy, that just because it's the nicest phone they put out this generation, it's not the same. It's not a direct continuity of Pixel 4 to Pixel 5. That, I think, is a little consumer confusing, bordering on, again, some of the same complaints I've got about Apple being a bit intellectually dishonest. But I think there's also a good clue there that the Pixel 5 was launching at a lower price with a bigger battery and 5G radio support than the Pixel 4 launched at. It came in cheaper than the Pixel 4 it replaced. It doesn't let Google off the hook. I really wish they had called it something different. Like a Pixel 5B. Like, I don't know what you call it in this naming convention that they've got. But I think that would have been a nicer consideration. If you're not going to make the full-blown flagship, call the phone something different to at least indicate that if someone owns a Pixel 4, the new phone that's coming out is less powerful than the phone they currently have. I think we'd all agree that's fair. Beyond that, though, when we really look at the price, performance, what the phone can do, the lifestyle features it has, I wasn't really bothered by what was offered. I was only kind of bothered by what it was called. Pixel 4 2020 edition. Even that would be kind of disingenuous, though, right? Because the Pixel 4 was still a more powerful phone. Pixel 4 SE. I kind of like that. You know, just kind of knock Apple on it. Or do more. Google could have called it the Pixel 5G. So, I feel like we've had the conversation I needed to have. Just chill, kind of digging into some nerdy stuff, looking at some photos, comparing some of the results. I really want to thank folks that actually did watch the video and put in some guesses, because I had so many naysayers, especially off YouTube. Like, man, the Google Pixel subreddit does not like me, and it's full of a lot of commentary that kind of comes direct from the R Android subreddit. Oh, he's just saying other reviewers can't be trusted. And like, I'm showing some evidence. It's not like I'm just yelling. I mean, like, I'm pointing this stuff out for a reason. No, it's just because I'm a hater. Okay, cool. Yeah, they did not take to this video very well. So again, it's always nice when I'm trying to do something, I'm trying to have a little fun, and some folks seem to be game for what it is that I'm trying to accomplish. The rest of the conversation is just the consistent media literacy issue that I think we all face. It's very comfortable to pick a winning team and feel good about the emotional side of being on the winning team. And you can convince yourself that that was the rational choice. I'm making the rational choice, but it's emotional too. And so I get when people like, oh, but you're just yelling about these other reviewers. See, the thing is, my conversation has always been and will always be about competition. I don't get excited about one brand winning. One brand winning is always bad for us. Always. It always cramps our style. It always removes features. It always makes us pay more. So my bent is competition. That's what gets me off about tech. So when I see bad trends, I kind of need to spell them out. And it's always going to be a frustrating part of every video that I make. If you're not into having this stuff pointed out to you, I get it. You want the entertainment. You just want to feel good about it. Cool. But that's not going to be my channel. Because if I just point out the nice things, then we end up in this echo chamber where the stuff I'm interested in is taken away. And I don't want the stuff that I'm interested in taken away. What I'm interested in, I want to see celebrated. I want to see people talking about it. I want to see it grow. I want to see more competition. I want to see crazier experiments. I want to see ever-increasing premium price tag phones focus in on specific niches and audiences so that we get the exact right tools for the different jobs that we need to perform. So I definitely appreciate, you know, why that puts some people off. It's the sort of comfortable lie of social media. Like I go to Facebook and Facebook just really wants to keep me on their site for as long as possible. And they manipulate my feed of info so that they try and keep me there. But it's not an accurate representation of sort of the larger conversation, and it becomes an echo chamber, or it becomes outrage manipulation, or whatever it is. If I don't spell this stuff out, then my comments are just obliterated by people that just want to regurgitate the popular opinion. So like on this Pixel 5 video, I spelled all this stuff out. I showed my work. I had very snarky and aggressive criticisms of the tech review process. And no one could really fight me on that. If I had just done a photo comparison, then every Samsung knight and Apple shill would have just said, oh, but you know, Apple and Samsung are the best. If I hadn't spelled every piece out and cut every argument off at the knees, then the comments would have been a disaster. And that's really the position I'm forced to be in a lot of these videos. It's like I need to argue these points before anyone has a chance to reply in the comments. And then the only thing they can pin on me is, but I don't like his tone. He's so argumentative. I don't care about my tone. I really don't. I really don't care if you care about my tone either. What I want to talk about is what I want to talk about. And the only way I can do that and have a comments section that has any value whatsoever is if I immediately and viscerally fight all of the Sam Apple shills before they have a chance to reply. And that's the bummer, is because like if we could just focus in on the legit conversation and I could still get YouTube traction on that, it would be a much happier review process. Aditya Anil, the Pixel subreddit didn't like a video giving a Pixel a fair shot. Nope. Mm-mm. Well, first of all, a lot of them don't like me from seeing my videos on our Android. So, I mean, that's what it is. But there is that perception in the Pixel subreddits from those other reviewers that the phones they like are hopelessly left behind. Because major tech reviewers have pointed to their phones and refused to review them, they're actually believing that conversation rather than looking at the inordinate amount of evidence that their phone cameras are still great shooters. It is such a self-defeating cycle, an echo chamber loop of like masochism. And it's taken root in the very subreddit, which should exist to talk about those products and to fairly discuss the pros and cons. But that if you're a fan of the Pixel, you go there to talk about the Pixel, but instead it's becoming the place where you go to talk about how you're going to leave the Pixel. And it sucks. It's super lame. Hey Key highlighting a message. Integrity always means some confrontation with disagreement, and that doesn't usually induce good feelings in people. So usually people just lean on the opinion that the biggest masses have. And again, for me, it's my tone. I'm purposely crafting a conversation that is intentionally confrontational, because if I don't, then the message doesn't get across. So when I put this stuff out there and when I highlight some of this goalpost moving or hypocrisy in gadget reviewing, I kind of want to get to a point where the only thing they can tag me on is, oh, he's just mean. He's meany. Mm. And kind of so far, that's most of it. Like, it's pretty rare that I'm so far off that someone can come in and be like, oh, well, you didn't consider this. And you're like, oh. I could have learned from that. Instead, it's like, oh, I'm just not even going to watch his videos because he's just always saying that, no, I'm not a real techie. And if you're inclined to support bad hypocritical reviewing, then yeah, you're probably not a real techie. If you have something to say about my review process and you can contribute to that conversation, I am so game. That would be so refreshing. I would love that. But that's not Reddit. All right. My voice is actually starting to fuzz out here, and we should probably go ahead and wrap this. We're right at 2 hours, and you know, this is kind of the right time. Folks, thanks for having just I know this was kind of a catharsis. This was almost a therapy session kind of a podcast, so I appreciate y'all being on. The hype train, that was amazing. I can't thank you enough for generating another hype train on the Twitch. And again, I'm going to promise I'm going to get better at doing Twitch things because I'm still really bad at the Twitch. But I, you know, there's something so refreshing week over week. And knowing that a good group of you disagree with me on some of the specifics. But the thing that kind of gives me hope for the future of tech reviewing every week, where I'm kind of, you know, coming back from the weekend and I'm kind of dreading getting back into shooting videos. And then I get to jump in this chat room, and even for having some debates from time to time, it's that conversation that matters. Competing ideas are the value, not lockstep agreement. And I still, like, every single time I put a video together, every single time I try a test, every time I try an experiment, every time I do something a little different in a review, I still get to learn something. And I don't have to sit here and posture like I'm some kind of indomitable authority who gets all of the little things wrong, but I still, my opinion is more valid because I've got the right masthead behind me and I've got the right banner on my website. And I don't have to pretend. Like, I don't have to, like, sit here and try and convince you that, you know, I'm just objectively correct when I spit out an opinion. But when I show work, we can have a fun debate, you know, back and forth on the merits of a testing process or what types of tests are valid or relevant. And that conversation is so much more refreshing than going to a website and just having some generic bias confirmed. So I really do appreciate it. And I really do thank you, all of you who contribute, who actually participate. It means more than I could probably express in words at the end of a 2 hour long podcast. ER1980, that's going to be coming up. ER asks, was wanting to ask Juan, how's your wife finding her experience with the Pixel 4a 5G? We're going to try and record a standalone podcast. She doesn't really want to be on camera, and I can respect that. So we're going to record just sort of a longer form conversation and put it up as a supplemental episode of the podcast. I'm hoping to have it recorded this week to maybe go out over the weekend, maybe middle of next week. So she's had it for a while. She's been using it for almost 2 months now, and she's got some thoughts. So again, an average consumer who lives with a tech junkie, I feel like that should be an interesting conversation where we have very different goals about how we use mobile electronics. So folks, be on the lookout for that. There's going to be a lot of videos coming out. I've got some audio tech coming out tomorrow. I need to follow up with that other company to see if I can talk about their USB audio solution, because I don't know if I should. And we'll have a lot more to chat about soon. Folks, I want you to have an amazing week. I want you to do awesome with your technology. I want you to be awesome with your technology. And I hope to see all of you back here next week for another episode of the Monday Morning Tech Chat Show on the SDGQA podcast channel. Be safe. Take care. We've got an end in sight to this objectively terrible situation that we're all in, but now's the most critical time, the most important time to really keep your head down and stay healthy. And I hope your families are doing well. So I'll catch you back here next week. I love you all. Be well.
Recording voiceover, spoken word, is truly one of my favorite activities. My second favorite hobby is photography. Now, the smartphone might be making us deaf, but we can't deny the awesome power of the phone as a platform for photography and multimedia creation. If you've been looking to improve your mobile photog skills, if you want to produce more professional content, or you're just looking to take your family photos to the next level, I wrote a book to help you out with that. Take better photos. Smartphone Photography for Noobs is available on Amazon Kindle. Walking through the basic terminology of photography, covering the settings on your camera, discussing composition and inspiration, and I even include a long list of exercises and challenges to really hone your skills, all with some helpful example photos and diagrams. Search for Take Better Photos, Smartphone Photography for Noobs on Amazon, or use the quick link bit.ly/betterphotosbook to grab your copy today.